This audio is produced and distributed by the Christian Biblical Church of God, Post Office Box 1442, Hollister, California, 95024-1442. For the Canadian office and offices overseas, listen at the end of the message, please. To visit our websites, they are cbcg.org and biblicaltruthministries.org. This is number two in our background series that will go with the book of Revelation. And it's very interesting that one of the clues that we see in the book of Revelation, which ties it all together, is where Jesus said, "I am the beginning, the ending, the first and the last, Alpha and Omega." And that gives us a clue, and as we saw last time going through Daniel, the second chapter, that God is the one who reveals the understanding of Scripture. And he's the one who has shown through Daniel, the second chapter, that only God knows the truth of the events in the future. And just think about it. How many times have people been wrong in trying to analyze the future because they want to speed up the return of Jesus Christ, and in many cases to fit their own theories? And we've also seen that happen, haven't we? So what we want to do with the book of Daniel is establish the historical fulfillment of things in the book of Daniel as we look back. So this gives us a perspective that was not available until even the beginning of it was not available until the final writing of the New Testament and the canonization of it by John. But even after John was given the whole book of Revelation, he didn't understand it. And that's evident, as we saw there in Matthew 24 and in Luke 13, where it talks about the abomination that makes desolate. It says, "Whoso reads, let him understand," which was an editorial comment that was put in there by John as he was canonizing the New Testament. And even in your red letter Bibles, you will see that that statement, "whoso reads, let him understand," or "the one who reads, let him understand," indicates that John and probably Andrew and Phillips, the other two apostles who were with him in canonizing the New Testament, did not understand it. But they realized this: these are the words of God. And it's going to be given, and understanding will come later when God reveals it to us. Now, we have that promise there in the book of Daniel. So all the things that Daniel wrote of all of the prophecies that were there, the only one he really understood or began to understand was the 70 weeks prophecy, as we saw last time. All the rest he didn't understand. He knew that the head of gold was Nebuchadnezzar, and he knew that other empires were going to rise after him. But he only lived to see the beginning of the Persian Empire, and by that time he was well into his 90s. And you see, so that fulfills what Jesus said, that many righteous men and prophets have wondered about the things that we understand and have not been able to understand. And the reason is because it wasn't time to reveal it. And that's the whole key that I want to emphasize with Daniel, the second chapter. When it is time for God to reveal the understanding, he will. And as we will see, with every one of the prophecies in the book of Daniel, it ends with the return of Christ. And there is nothing that we find in the New Testament or in the Old Testament which gives us an absolute timing as to the year when Jesus is going to return. The only hint that we have, as we covered, was that in Daniel, the ninth chapter, we have the 70-week prophecy. And the last week being the final 7 years leading to the return of Christ, no one knows when it begins. Now, that's why in the charts that we have for Revelation, we begin by going to the prophesied fulfillment, and then based upon the framework of the holy days, we are able to get a perspective on these things, which is much clearer. But as I mentioned concerning the chart, a chart is a visual approximation of how the things will fall. And so that's why it was done that way. And as I mentioned, that we use the calculated Hebrew calendar at the end time because we see so many fulfillments in God's word, such as the day Jesus died was on the Passover day. So he used that Passover day to fulfill his word and prophecy. Same way with the Passover in Egypt. Same way with the origin of the Passover with Abraham. We can see all of those things, and that gives us some understanding. Likewise, with the day of Pentecost, we know that the law was given on Pentecost, and we also know that the church began on Pentecost. And so we have those as markers which tell us that if we want to increase our understanding of the events at the end time and the prophecies that are in the Bible, if we view it on the framework of the holy days, we are going to have more understanding, but it doesn't mean that we have absolute finite understanding of those. So please realize that. When we are dealing in prophecy, it's not like, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. You know, 6 days shall you work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord. Now, that's clear. That's dogmatic. But with prophecies that have yet to be fulfilled, we can say, it looks like this, and perhaps it could be this way. Here is a clue for us to understand. And we have to do that with the things that we don't understand, because, as Paul said, we are looking through a glass darkly. And we have the whole litany of all of the failed interpretations of prophecy of men down through time, trying to understand the Word of God and trying to understand the prophecies, and many of them to make it fit their own time. Well, it's going to fit God's timing. Now, as we pointed out, and I just want to review this, just by way of review. To understand what the mark of the beast is could not be understood until the advent of the digital chip, insertable chip, which can go in the right hand or in the forehead. And that was... they have been working on that for years, and it's going to improve absolutely considerably. We do not know exactly how far it's going to go, but let me give you a clue. If you've been watching television lately, you've been seeing the new iPod. Now, the new iPod is about a quarter of an inch thick. It's about an inch and a half wide. And it's about 5 inches long. And the technology there is so sophisticated that this one little instrument can hold 1,000 songs. Now, I bring that up from the point of view to bring out this, that when the final mark of the beast comes, it is going to be so powerful. The buying and selling is just going to be a minor part of it. It's going to be for control, control of the mind, control of your choices, tracking you wherever you are. And it is going to be an absolute profound thing that is going to remove from all of those who receive it free choice. And that violates what God has given to all human beings so absolutely, of a great sin, that that's why God gives a warning concerning the mark of the beast. And along that line, we also know this, that Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 13 that prophecies will fail. Now, it's important to understand this. Let's go there and look at that for just a minute so we can realize the difference. A lot of people look at that and say, well, Paul wrote that the prophecies of God are going to fail. Well, let's understand something. They are not going to fail. What did we read in Daniel, the second chapter? The vision is sure, and the interpretation thereof is true. Now here, in 1 Corinthians 13, here's what we read. Verse 8. Love never fails. But whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Now these cannot be the prophecies of God. Why? Because Jesus said, the heaven and the earth shall perish, but my word shall not perish. And that was right there in Matthew 24. So it means that all the prophecies of God are going to come true exactly as he said. So this means prophecies shall fail. This is of the prophecies of men. And so this is a forewarning of the wrong interpretations of men concerning the prophecies in the Bible. That's why we have seen so many of them fail, as we have already covered and give the litany of all of the years that were supposed to be the return of Christ. And just to show you another thing, this week I got a paper from someone who said Christ is going to return on Day of Atonement 2005. Isn't going to happen. Like I was discussing with a man the other day. The King of the South is nowhere on the horizon. And you cannot have a beginning of the end until the King of the South is ensconced in power. So there are a lot of things that have to happen in prophecy. And you see, one thing that is very important is this. It's going to happen the way God has said, in the timing that God has determined, which means that there also has to fulfill the prophecy that the Apostle Paul said, that they will say, where is the promise of his coming? Now, which means this, it's going to have enough time and go beyond what everyone has thought when Christ would return, so that now everyone who believes in Christ and his return can be mocked. Now, you tie that together with what Jesus said concerning Noah. Now, remember, Noah was 120 years building and preaching that the end was going to come in a flood. And they all mocked him. And I just imagine, on the day that it all started to happen, when the fountains of the deep broke up and the heavens turned absolutely almost black as coal and dropped rain, says the windows of heaven opened and the fountains of the deep were broken up. I just imagine the day before at one of the wedding parties, because you see, what did Jesus say? They were marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah went into the ark. I just imagine that they were even mocking Noah when they had their wedding ceremony on that day, saying, oh, ho, 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 look, things are going on just the way they always have, see. So God catches all the mockers and those who are cynical in their own traps. So you need to keep that in mind with all of these prophecies. Now, let's come back to the book of Daniel, and let's come to chapter 3, and we're going to review just a little bit here to get a little bit of numbers involved, because there are numbers in prophecy. which gives us clues. Now remember, we started out by showing that the end times out of Daniel the third chapter, and we're going to get you some printed out material on not Daniel the third chapter, Daniel the ninth chapter. We're going to Daniel 3 here now, but on Daniel the ninth chapter, how that the last 7 years is reserved right for the end. And we have some clues pertaining to that. Now let's come to Daniel 3 and verse 1. And Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits, that's 60 feet high, 60, and breadth thereof was 6 cubits, no, that's 90 feet high, because a cubit is 18 inches. So that's 90 feet high by 9 feet wide, and so forth. So if you take the cubits, 60 times 6, you come up with 360, and times that by 7, you come up with 2,520 days, which is the approximate length of 7 years. So we have a clue. Now, see, a lot of these things in Daniel, we have clues and markers. We have some interpretation. And when we get to the book of Revelation, we have greater understanding and a greater interpretation, but we don't have it absolutely finite. And that's what we need to realize. And the way that God, the reason God has done it that way is so that the just shall what? Live by faith. So rather than trusting God by seeing a prophecy and you're looking for it and you misunderstand it or you misinterpret it and therefore you give up on God, which a lot of people have because they put too much stock in their absolute interpretation of prophecy, and as a result, since it didn't happen the way that they expected it to happen, they just give up and go on their way. Which shows that what? You must live by faith and believe God all the times, and the things that don't work out the way that we think, it's in the hands of God. So likewise here, we can say, all right, we can come up with 2,520 days, which then is literal fulfillment of 7 years. Then we also see here in Daniel the fourth chapter where Nebuchadnezzar was insane for 7 years. Seven times or 7 years. So there again, we have an indication. We have a fulfillment or a type. And then we have a latter fulfillment or an anti-type at the end. So there again is another clue which goes to the end. Then we come here to Daniel, the fifth chapter, which we covered last week a little bit, so I want to review it. And what we're going to do with this, we're going to see that again we have a clue in the fall of Babylon. Because remember, every place that it talks about Babylon falling, it is always used twice, isn't it? Babylon is fallen. Now that gives us a first fulfillment, which we find here in Daniel the fifth chapter, and a final fulfillment, which we find in Revelation the 18th chapter. So we have type and anti-type, first fulfillment, last fulfillment. Now we have buried in the saying here, beginning in verse 25, where it talks about the judgment against Babylon. So let's read it, verse 25. And this is the writing that was written by the hand on the wall. And that's where we have the famous saying, the hand writing on the wall. Many, many tinkle Upharsin. Now, this is all based upon the Jira and the Mini and the Tinkle, which is this. It's the Mini is 50 shekels, so we have Mini, that's 100. Then we have Tinkle, which is 1 shekel. Then we have Upharsin, which is 25 shekels. And then you add all of that up and you times it by 20, because there are 20 jiras in every shekel. And you come up with 2,520. So here we have a clue concerning another 7 years, which also at the end of that 7 years is what? The judgment against Babylon, and it falls. And so that's why the last 7 year period, which we see prophesied of in the book of Daniel, must also be carried on over into the book of Revelation. And when Babylon is finally judged, it is judged at the end of the 7 years. And we covered about how that was taken by Darius and Cyrus. Then we also have another attempt concerning getting at Daniel's life, and it wasn't time for Daniel yet to die, and he wasn't going to die that way, because at the end of the book of Daniel, God promised that he would go his way, meaning he would die a natural death and be put in the grave. And he was probably buried somewhere there in Babylon. Now, I don't know if they ever took his bones to Judea or not. I couldn't tell you. There's no record of it. And so, let's pick it up here in Daniel 6 and verse... Daniel 6 and verse 25. Now, Darius and Cyrus both were kings of... Darius was of the Medes, and Cyrus was the Persian. And so it was the Medo-Persian Empire. Now, after they threw Daniel into the lion's den, and God probably put an angel in there to calm the lions. You know, I don't know if Daniel went in there and said, "Here, kitty, kitty, kitty," or not. You know, you don't know what happened. But all of those who conspired to have him thrown in the lion's den after Darius was happy that he was spared, thrilled that it was spared, he threw all of them in there, and the lions ate up all of those who conspired against him. Now, let's understand something. Because God was working with the Persian Empire to set this whole thing up years before it ever happened. Because Cyrus, who was prophesied in the book of Isaiah to be a redeemer to the Jews in captivity in Babylon, was the son of Ahasuerus or Artaxerxes and Esther. And so who was in the court in the Persian Empire? You have Mordecai, you have Nehemiah, and so there were a lot of things going on in Persia to set everything up for this time right here in Daniel 6 and 7. So we can take that as a clue this way. There are a lot of things that God is doing to set up the events at the end time that we do not yet see and understand. So when it comes time for the end events to take place, it has already been prepared. And that means God is working with nations and leaders and people, and his church. The angels of God are also working. Satan and his demons are also working. So this is going to be at the end time, a whole worldwide affair that is basically empowered by the spiritual powers of God and his angels and the spiritual powers of Satan and his demons, and how they lead and guide the nations. And with it, there are going to be men that God will use. For example, like with Darius here. Now, after Daniel was brought out of the lion's den unhurt here, let's begin in Daniel 6 and verse 24. And the king commanded, and they brought those men which had accused Daniel, and cast them into the den of lions, them and their children and their wives, and the lions had mastery of them, broke all their bones in pieces, or ever they came at the bottom of the pit. In other words, as they were falling down, the lions got them. Now, here's another thing we can look at. In the middle of the greatest trial and everything that is going to take place in the history of the world, what do we have in Revelation 7? The 144,000 great innumerable multitude, which means that there will be those who will be protected right in the middle of all the things that are going on, just like Daniel was thrown into the lion's den to be killed. But God spared him. So then, verse 25. Then King Darius, so that's Darius and Cyrus, as we will see, wrote unto all people, nations, languages that dwell on the earth. Now, this is to the whole civilized world. So you see, we need to understand the effect and the vast reach that Babylon had with 120 provinces. It covered all of the Middle East, all of Asia going into India, all of the North going into Media and Parthia and Persia, and all of the kingdoms over into Europe, down into all of Northern Africa, and down into Arabia and everything. So this went out in all of them, you see. And he wrote, "Peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel." See, so God gives himself a witness of the true God, doesn't he? All the time. Now, Darius was undoubtedly not converted, but he was used of God to do his will. And he gave, here's part of an epistle. Now, Nebuchadnezzar wrote an epistle, didn't he? Yes, which means this. God is going to deal with the world leaders to accomplish his will in the end time the same way he did here. So he says, "For he is the living God and steadfast forever, and his kingdom which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivers and rescues. He works signs and wonders in heaven and in earth. Who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Now when we come to chapter 7 is a very important pivotal, or what you might say, very basic prophecy, which then, as we will see, ties in with Daniel 2, ties in with Daniel 8. And so we're going to go through Daniel the 7th chapter here quite meticulously. And then we will go back and review the historical fulfillments of it. But what I want us to see here, let's come to the last part of Daniel, the 7th chapter. Daniel 7. And this is what happens in Daniel, the 2nd chapter, Daniel, the 7th chapter, Daniel, the 8th chapter, Daniel, the 9th chapter, Daniel 11 and 12, it ends up at the end with the return of Christ. So it says here, verse 26, but the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and destroy it unto the end, and the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Right up to the setting up of the, what we know in the book of Revelation, the millennium. So you see, in order to understand Daniel 7, we're going to see that's dependent upon Daniel 2, Daniel 8, Revelation 17, and Revelation 13. All together. So let's come back here and begin in Daniel 7 and verse 1. Now, it doesn't tell us how long that Belshazzar ruled, but he ruled a very short time because he was actually co-regent with his father, who was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel 7 and verse 1, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. Daniel spoke and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven strove upon the great sea. Now, we'll talk about this a little later on, and we're going to see again, just exactly like in Daniel, the second chapter, there are clues pointing to the coming book of Revelation. God reveals. Remember, we saw seven times God reveals? Okay. Now, we'll see. We'll come back to each one of these verses and analyze a little bit more after we read through down through verse 8. And four beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. First was like a lion, and had eagle's wings, very similar to what we would call a cherubim or cherub. And I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth, and made to stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it. Verse 5. And I beheld another beast, a second, like to a bear, and it raised up itself on one side, and had three ribs in its mouth of it, between the teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, arise, devour much flesh. Verse 6, and after this I beheld, and lo, another, like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl, and the beast had four heads, and dominion was given to it. And after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, and strong exceedingly, and it had iron teeth, and it devoured and broke in pieces, and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the other beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. And I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them a little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots, and behold, in the horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. Now this sounds like some Nintendo games today, doesn't it? And some of the movies today. Isn't it interesting that in the end time, what do we see? We see many of these type of creatures portrayed in the movies and games and things like this that are played today. All right. Now let's come down and let's look at some of the clues that we have as to what this means. First of all, let's count the number of heads and then the horns. Right, verse 4. First one had one head, like a lion. The second one
had one head, was like a bear. The third one, verse 6, had four heads. So that is 6. The fourth one had one head, but 10 horns. So when we add those all up together, what do we get? We get 7 heads and 10 horns. Now let's come back to Revelation 12 here for just a minute, because we're going to see 7, Revelation 12, 7 heads and 10 horns is always a marker of Satan's system and his organization. And we also have to realize that God uses Satan in very powerful ways. Now let's come back here to Revelation 12, and let's pick it up here in verse 3. And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns upon his heads. Now we're going to see, when we come to the last beast of Revelation 13, the power shifts from the 7 heads to the 10 horns. Right. We have 7 and 10 in Revelation 13, 7 heads and 10 horns. Verse 1, and I stood upon the sand of the sea. Isn't it interesting? Now we have the sea, don't we? That ties back in with Daniel 7 and verse 2. 4 beasts rise up out of the sea. That was beginning with Daniel. Now at the end, we have 1 beast rise up out of the sea. So here we have the sea, we have water and everything. And this one having 7 heads and 10 horns. Only this time the crowns are on the 10 horns. So the apparent power shifts to these 10 horns. Now we come to Revelation 17. See, so this helps tie it all together. And this also tells us that you cannot understand the final fulfillment of Daniel 7 until we understand the final fulfillment of the book of Revelation. Okay, Revelation 17 and verse 3. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having 7 heads and 10 horns. Now, we'll get into the interpretation of that a little bit later. But let's come here to verse 12. And the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings which have received no kingdom as yet, but received power as kings 1 hour with the beast. So we have the 7 and we have the 10 again, don't we? Now, Revelation 17 with the 10, what does it talk about them? Verse 13, these have one mind, they give their power and strength unto the beast, these shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are called, that are with him are called, chosen, and faithful. Again, it ends in the return of Christ. As we will see, as we have already seen, that ties in with Daniel 7. Now, that also ties in with Daniel, the second chapter. Let's go back and read that, because we're looking at 10 again. Only this time, instead of 10 horns, we're looking at what? 10 toes. But what does it say of the 10 toes, which ties in with Revelation 17, as kings? And those 10 are contemporaneous at the same time. Now let's read it here. Verse 42, Daniel 2. And as the toes of the feet were part iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas you saw iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in the days of these kings, so here what do we have? We have God interpreting the ten toes as ten kings. And what does it say? In the days of those kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And that has to tie in with Revelation 17, with the ten horns that receive power 1 hour with the beast, and they fight Christ. No. Without the book of Daniel, and without the book of Revelation, we can't make this connection. So this brings us a harmony of it. Now, let's come back here to Daniel, the 7th chapter, and investigate this a little bit more. So we saw here, one other thing concerning water. Just hold your place since we're flipping between Revelation and Daniel. Let's come to Daniel's Revelation 17 again here. Revelation 17, and we'll finish the type of the waters and the sea and so forth. Revelation 17 and verse 1. And there came one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials, and talked with me, saying, Come here, and I will show you the judgment of the great whore that sits upon many waters. So there again we have waters. It is defined for us down here in verse 15. And he said to me, The waters which you saw where the whore sits are peoples, and multitudes, and nations, and tongues. And the ten horns which you saw upon the beast, these shall hate the whore, shall make her desolate, and naked, shall eat her flesh, and burn her with fire. So right at the end, God does the same thing he's always done. What does he do? He turns the enemy against its own self. Did he not do that when these Assyrians came down and they were threatening in the days of Hezekiah? Yes, he did. He caused a tumult among them, and all 180,000 of the Assyrians got up and were fighting among themselves and killed themselves, and the hand of the angel was there to make sure that it was done. So we have a repeat of it here, don't we? So the waters, the sea, the oceans have to do with peoples and nations and tongues and languages and so forth. So this is also depicting a whole worldwide event. Now, let's go back and look at verse 4 again, and we will see how this ties in with Nebuchadnezzar and the first kingdom of Babylon. And Nebuchadnezzar came as close, how shall we say, not converted, I don't believe he was ever converted, but through the experience of being insane for 7 years, and then he wrote his epistle. Now, we'll go back and read that, because it says of this one here, that he was made to stand on his feet, and a man's heart was given to it. And that can only refer to Nebuchadnezzar and his experience and what he wrote to the people. Now, let's pick it up here in Daniel 4 and verse 34, because the whole epistle here, beginning in verse 1, Daniel 4. Nebuchadnezzar the king, unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I thought it good to show you the signs and wonders that the high God wrought toward me. How great are his signs, how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. Then he explained the whole thing about what happened to him. Then we come to verse 34. So you see, isn't it interesting? The first beast was given a man's heart and spoke of God with greater eloquence than any of the other beasts. Now we saw that Darius wrote a very short epistle, but here Nebuchadnezzar writes this, see, because he was given the heart of a man after that he was given his kingdom back and his sanity returned to him. Verse 34, Daniel 4. And this gives us the interpretation of Daniel 7 and verse 4. Now, Daniel 4, verse 34, let's read it. And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up my eyes to heaven, and my understanding returned to me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that lives forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion. His kingdom is from generation to generation. Let's fast forward this tape and turn it to the other side, please. With the two wings, and of course, cherubim. And every time you see something about Babylon, it shows what? It shows a cherub with a lion's head and wings. Now, let's pick it up here in verse 35. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. Now, you can tie that in with Isaiah 40 and verse 12. All the nations are a drop of a bucket. And isn't it interesting how that God has made us in his image, that he's given us free moral agency, that he's given us choice, and yet we can stand up and reject him, go against him, and nothing else in all of creation does that. Now, what if you created a machine, and it was so sophisticated, and of course you've had this on some science fiction movies and so forth, that what it does, it goes against you. What would you do? Destroy it. Well, you see, all of this shows that God has a greater purpose for mankind in the end run. But because of this and the carnal mind and deception, which Nebuchadnezzar is bringing out here, that even though people think there's some great thing, you know, like Nebuchadnezzar did, he was standing there looking at Babylon, and I could just see him kind of with his thumbs in his robe under his arms and looking out there and saying, "Oh, my great power built this mighty Babylon." Bam, that's when the 7 years started on him, see. Well, here at the end of the 7 years, he now gets the point, okay, that the inhabitants thereof are reputed as nothing. And he does according to his will in the armies of heaven. Isn't that interesting? The armies of heaven, angels and demons, and among the inhabitants of the earth. And none can stay his hand or say to him, "What are you doing?" Now you can tie that in with the book of Job. Isn't that what happened with Job? Yes. And at the same time, my reason returned to me, for the glory of my kingdom, my honor, and the brightness returned unto me, and my counselors and lords sought unto me, probably very grumbling, "Oh, yes, Lord, yes, King, oh, here we are, yes, we're right here," you know, the mighty politicians. And I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added to me. That means he was given the heart of a man rather than the heart of a beast. Because back here in Daniel, the third chapter, what happened? He had the heart of the beast, and what did he do with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? He threw them into the fiery furnace. Now here he comes back very humble. Notice what he says, last verse here. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of Heaven, all whose works are truth and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride he is able to abase. And he had 7 years of experience of abasement. So this gives us the interpretation of Daniel 7 and the first beast that was the head of a lion, or like a lion with eagle's wings, was made to stand on his feet, was given the heart of a man. Now, verse 5. And another beast, a second, like a bear, and it raised itself up on one side and had 3 ribs in the mouth of it, between the teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, arise and devour much flesh. Well, now, in order for the Persian Empire, the Medo-Persian Empire, to arise, what they had to do was this. They had to first take out the Assyrian Empire, which they did. And then they took out the Babylonian one, which they took it over. They didn't take it out. They took over Egypt. So you've got Assyria, Babylon, and Egypt. Those are the 3 ribs that the Persian Empire took over. Now, verse number 6. And we will see this again when we come to chapter 8. We will see an interpretation of this in chapter 8. As a matter of fact, we might go to chapter... Well, no, we better finish chapter 7 first, so we'll save chapter 8 for a little later on. And after this, I beheld... And another like a leopard, meaning strong, stealthy, cunning, able to come against an enemy with few and defeat it. Now, if you can go on if you have access to the History Channel, look at the rise of Alexander the Great and the Grecian Empire. How quickly that came about. And how he used tactics and weapons never before used to come against the Persians, and with a few number of men moving swiftly to absolutely encircle and destroy the vastly superior number of the Persian Empire. But you see, what it is this. It's not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, God says, which means that when it comes time for God to take down a kingdom, all the power and might and armies of that kingdom are not going to stop it. Now here we have here, which had on the back of it 4 wings of a fowl, and the beast also had 4 heads. Now we'll see what those were here in a little bit. And dominion was given to it. Now also this tells us what? No empire or world power can rise in power unless it's of God. And God gives it the dominion. And if you study the Grecian Empire under Alexander the Great and how quickly it went, he conquered all of the civilized world in such a short period of time. It's really quite an amazing thing. And what happened, let's just get some dates on this now. Now, if you'll take the chart that we have and you'll look at it, let's come over here and we'll see how we are putting them together in sequence. Daniel, the second chapter, the head of gold, which is Nebuchadnezzar, and you come across, and that's the first, that is the first head of Daniel, the seventh chapter, the beast like a lion. And then, as you will see, we will come across to the other things, but in the far right-hand column, you have the Chaldean Empire, 625 to 538 B.C. Then you come back over to the column with Daniel 2 on the left again, and you have the breast and arms of silver. That ties in with the second beast, the bear, of Daniel 7. And we will see the fulfillment there in Daniel 8 in just a minute. And this is the second head. This is the second one of Daniel 7, which then is the Persian Empire, which is the Medo-Persian Empire, 558 to 330 B.C. So it lasted over 300 years. Then we come to the column again on the left with the chart. The belly and thighs of brass. This ties in with the beast that is the leopard with the four heads. And also represents the third, fourth, and fifth heads of Babylon. This is the Grecian Empire, which then under Alexander the Great, and then it was divided into four divisions. That's why there are four heads. There are four divisions. And this comes down to from 333 B.C. to 31 B.C. again, just a little over 200 years. Then the fourth beast, the legs of iron, and isn't it interesting that in the fourth one we have iron? And this ties it together. Now, let's come back here to Daniel 7, and we will read that. This is the seventh head of the prophesied Babylon with ten horns. Now, verse 7 of Daniel 7. And after this I saw in the night visions, behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and exceeding strong, and it had great iron teeth, and it devoured and broke in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the other beasts that were before it, and it had ten horns. Now this means this was different. It was a not quite a combination of it, but it was different than all of them. It used all of the tactics, but with greater force, with greater power, and it conquered the whole world, the civilized world. Not the Far East. The Far East has its day a little later on at the end of time here. Then he saw something very interesting, and I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots, and behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of man, or of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. So this is a very unusual thing. So what we actually have, we have 11 horns, don't we? We have 10 plus a small one. And the small one exercises great power. Now we will see what this amounts to here in just a little bit, because it gives the interpretation. Now, let's come down here to Daniel 7 and verse 15 so we can see the interpretation. And this is what helps us tie everything together as we have on this chart. Verse 15. I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near unto one of them that stood by and asked him the truth of all of this. So there was an angel that was there to give him an understanding of this. So he told me and made me to know the interpretation of the things. These great beasts, which are four kings which shall arise out of the earth. I remember in Daniel the second chapter, we saw that king and kingdom were used interchangeably. So it wasn't just four kings alone, but what these four kings did was to establish an empire or a kingdom. Now notice, verse 18, but the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom, possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. So this comes right down to the end again, as we've seen in every one of these prophecies. So what this does, this helps give the first part of understanding the book of Revelation. That's why you cannot understand the book of Revelation without Daniel, and you cannot understand Daniel without the book of Revelation. Each of them have certain parts that gives us interpretation. Each of them have things to add one to another, like a hand in a glove or like a puzzle. And a puzzle would be a good description of it from this point of view. If you've ever had a 1,000-piece puzzle and almost all of them look the same, boy, it takes you a long time to get it together. But there comes a point as you're going along, which then you begin to see a pattern, and then you can put certain sections of it together. Well, this is what the interpretation is here. It's giving us certain key pieces to the puzzle so we can put it together a little more accurately and understand it with the book of Revelation. Now, obviously, as we have seen, Daniel didn't understand very much of it, except as he was given the interpretation like it is here. So verse 19, he said, then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others, exceeding dreadful, whose teeth were of iron, and his nails of brass, which devoured and broke in pieces and stamped the residue with his feet. And that's exactly the description in history that they attribute to the Roman Empire. And they had iron. And they had power. And they built roads. And had weapons. And had ships. Some of the best ships in the world at that time. Now, verse 20. And of the 10 horns that were in its head, and of the other which came up before whom 3 fell, even of that horn that had eyes and a mouth that spoke very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. Now that's very interesting, isn't it? We'll see how that is fulfilled here in just a minute when we look at the book of Revelation. And I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them. Until, so this is going to happen until, the Ancient of Days came. Isn't that interesting, referring to Jesus as the Ancient of Days? Okay. One like the Son of Man, you have the Ancient of Days who actually is God the Father, which then tells us something, doesn't it? Remember, we have thought, well, when we're all resurrected and on the sea of glass, why should we not see God the Father? Well, this tells us we're going to see Him. He's not coming directly to the earth. But who's going to perform the wedding between Christ and the church? Why not God the Father? After all, the church consists of His children, don't they? Just as the one who became Jesus Christ was the Son of God. Till the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High. So this really helps tie it in to the book of Revelation chapter 20 more than anything else, right? Yes. And the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon the earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth. Now this prophecy is yet to be fulfilled. And it shall tread down and break in pieces. And the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings which shall arise, and another shall arise after them, and shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue 3 kings or 3 kingdoms. And he shall speak great words against the Most High, shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until a time and times and dividing of times. Now that's 3.5 years, or 1260 years, if you take a day in fulfilling a prophecy. And we will see how that was literally true. Now, if you don't have, and I mentioned this before, the video, Israel of the Alps, you can write in for it, we'll send it to you. This is a tremendous video done by the Seventh-day Adventist, which show not only the church fleeing, being taken into the wilderness, as it says there in Revelation, the 12th chapter, but also it shows the persecution against the church. And it shows how that the little horn, which could be none other than the Roman Catholic Church, it can be none other, actually was the one behind all the Inquisition and all of the killing and everything that was done. Yes, they used the civil powers of the Roman Empire to do it. But whoever commands it to be done is the one who's responsible. Like the very last persecution against the Waldensians, I think it was in the late 1600s, that the Jesuit confessor of Louis the 16th promised that Louis the 16th would go into heaven if he would exterminate the Waldensians. And it was the very last persecution in the 1600s. Now, mind you, that's only 300 years removed. And it was a terrible thing that they went through. It was just awful, the things that they went through. And like it said here, wore out the saints. And it was literally true at the end that the few of the Waldensians that were finally released out of prison were allowed in the wintertime, barefoot, hardly clothed, to walk over the Alps and go down into Switzerland to find some refuge, which they did with the Protestants. And that was something. And they were literally worn out, just like it says here. Okay. Well, this also tells us that when the persecution comes again, that's exactly what's going to happen. They're going to wear out the saints. And there's another identifying factor of it here. And think to change times and laws. And it was the Roman Empire, Constantine, and the popes, which changed Sabbath to Sunday, changed the feast of God to the occult holidays of this world, changed the laws of God, which you cannot change. And so this identifies that system today. Looking at it from Daniel's point of view forward, you wouldn't be able to know or understand what that would be. See, because here we are now, 2,000 years removed, and we can look back and see that, yes, that does fulfill it. Now, let's come back to our chart. Let's come back to our chart, and we will see how this, then, is fulfilled. Let's come to the left-hand side of the chart, Daniel, the second chapter in the image, legs of iron. That's equated to the fourth beast of Daniel 7, strong like iron, and with 10 horns. Now, this 10 horns, as we will see, gives us a succession of kingdoms coming down to the very last kingdom, which we will see is manifested in Revelation 13. We'll see that a little bit later. So you come across here the explanation, the seventh head of prophetic Babylon with 10 horns. That's out of Daniel, the seventh chapter. So you have the Roman Empire, which began in 31 BC, and the pagan Roman Empire was not fully converted until 476 AD. On 476 AD, the old interpretation was that the deadly wound was the fall of the Roman Empire. Well, the truth is, the Roman Empire never really fell. And besides, Revelation 13 talks about one of its heads was wounded. But here we have seven heads and 10 horns. Okay. Now let's look at the horns as they come down. Now, if you've never seen the one on the Huns, which then are the Heruli, the Huns, and the Ostrogoths, Attila the Hun. Quite a story. If you can watch that on the History Channel, that'll be really good if you can see that. It was Pope Leo the Great who went and made, no, Pope, was it Leo or Gregory? I forget. I think it was Gregory. Pope Gregory. He went and made peace with Attila the Hun. And right after that, his kingdom was taken down. And it was the popes who were instrumental in bringing down the three invading empires against Rome. They came in and became part of the Roman Empire. Those who stayed became part of it. Could never conquer it. Rome never really fell. It was ransacked. It was invaded. People were carried off captive by the Vandals, by the Heruli, and the Ostrogoths. Now, until Emperor Justinian in 554 AD, the emperor ruled supreme with the church kind of by its side. But what happened with Justinian was this. He was coronated by the Pope. And as ruler of the Holy Roman Empire. So the empire never really ceased to be. But the empire continued now with something unusual. The Catholic Church was the great power. So this has to be the little horn that becomes the great power, which then rules the Roman Empire. And with every revival of it, and all of these are revivals of the Roman Empire, and since every one of these things, you have a rising of the empire and then a waning of the empire, a rising of the empire and a waning of the empire through all of the 10 horns. But the last seven of the horns then, because the first three are removed, the last seven are run by the little horn, which then has got to be the woman who rides the beast
in Revelation 17.
Now, we'll go back and we'll see that a little bit later on when we tie it all together. Each one of these resurrections of it, we'll just mention it here. You have the restoration, or the imperial restoration of the empire by Justinian. See, because the eastern part of the empire never fell, because you have the two legs, eastern and western. It never fell, so you cannot say that the Roman Empire ceased to be, because you have the East Empire and the West Empire. But when Justinian came in, he went back and submitted to the Pope at Rome, and the Pope at Rome then took great power and authority over the Roman Empire and brought it together. That's why it's called the Imperial Restoration by Justinian. Then that lasted for a period of time, and after 200 years, it was revived again under what is called the Frankish Kingdom under Charlemagne, and that began in 774 A.D., and Charlemagne was crowned by the Pope in 800 A.D. And also, if you can, all of these things are very interesting, and you can see at various times on the History Channel. And they were very absorbed in doing religious works and promoting the Catholic Church and building temples and things like this for their good works that they would do. Now then, the next revival of it was the Holy Roman Empire, which then came out of Germany, and Otto the Great was crowned by the Pope in 962 A.D. So then that diminished down, and through it all, if you can get Langer's Encyclopedia of World History, you will see that all during this time there were wars, there were battles, there were different emperors that would come up, and then they would come down to a low point, and then another horn would rise up and reconstitute the empire. So all the way through, with the rising and falling of these different phases of the Roman Empire, you have the ten horns that come up. Now, we're getting into more modern time, the Habsburg dynasty, and you have Charles the Great crowned by the Pope in 1520. Now, Napoleon is a little different. And the Habsburg dynasty even came down to the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and that remnants of that lasted into what? To the time of World War I. And the Habsburg still has the throne, still has the family, still has descendants. And if you know anything about the Da Vinci Code and what they claim, the descendants of Mary Magdalene and so forth, they say that it comes down through the Habsburg dynasty, and that some of the literal genes of Jesus are in this royal lineage, which is a lie. But nevertheless, they have one of their descendants, Prince Charles Habsburg. I don't know if his first name is Charles, but he works directly with the United Nations, and many people think that he will be instrumental in finally getting the United Nations back to Europe, which it's going to go back to Europe. You wait and see. It is going to go back. And then will come the final restoration. But let's come back here to Napoleon. Napoleon came to the Pope to be coronated by the Pope, and what did he do? He took the crown out of the Pope's hands and put it on his own head to show that he was not going to submit to the Pope. And of course, there were a lot of battles and wars and things that went on and so forth. Now,
After that time, the Roman Catholic Church rose to its greatest height of power up to the 1870s. And during that time, they established the doctrine of the infallibility of the popes. They established the doctrine of the Assumption of Mary into heaven, and it reached its greatest power at that time. They actually had temporal kingdoms that the Pope would rule as king in Italy. And they were so oppressive and so hateful and so mean. Now, there's also, if you read the book, Who Assassinated President Abraham Lincoln, Cheneke, the one who wrote the book, My 50 Years in the Church of Rome, and I wondered how he ever got through it, because he must have had huge tear glands, because he says there all the time, in 50 years, all he did was cry and moan and weep and wonder why it was so evil. And finally, after 50 years, he got out of it. But nevertheless, it is well documented. But he shows how that the Roman Catholic Church was behind the powers to cause the United States to fall. And they were the ones who were funding money to Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy, and Maximilian, the emperor of France at that time, to send French troops down to Mexico and to come up, and after the Civil War, to take over America. See? And they have been at this scheme for a long time, and they still have never ended it. And the scheme is finally going to work in a little different way, except they're going to be disappointed from this point of view. Most Catholics in America today are like Protestants rather than obedient Catholics like they are in other countries of the world. And they could, and in many cases, they could care less what the Pope says or thinks. And that's why in the final analysis, a lot of them are going to be killed, like the Roman Catholics who did not submit to the Pope the way that the Pope wanted were also killed and martyred along with the Protestants during the Inquisition. And if you haven't read anything about the Jesuits, and if you haven't read anything about the power that they exercise, and all of those factors, you see, all come into play for the fulfillment of these prophecies at the end time. Now, let's go on. Under Garibaldi, what did he do beginning in 1870? He led civil war in Italy, and he conquered all of the papal kingdoms, reduced the power of the papacy to what we now know as the Vatican, which was limited to 108 acres. And the Pope, from that time forward until the concordat with Mussolini in 1927 or 29, was an exile and captive in the Vatican. So, the revival did not begin with Garibaldi. The revival began with Mussolini. And Hitler. Because both of them made concordance with the Vatican, and that allowed the Vatican to then be recognized as a nation, and again, a world power. Although, geographically restricted. No more papal armies, they have to use armies of nations now. No more papal states, but they rule through their diplomatic system. Now let's come back here to Revelation 17. and let's talk a little bit more about the Vatican and so forth, which gives us an identification of this whole religious system of the Great Whore. Now, the Great Whore is the counterfeit of the Bride of Christ. And the Great Whore claims that she is the Bride of Christ. But the Bride of Christ will not be the Bride of Christ until when? After the resurrection. Now, here is what identifies it. Verse 18, Revelation 17. And the woman which you saw is that great city, now no longer having any temporal lands at all, that reigns, and as it is in the Greek there, that reigns, that has royal power over the kings of the earth. Now there is no other city in the world. Isn't it interesting? It's not a nation, but it is a city. And the religious power has to ride the beast, dictate to the beast what is going to be done. Now, there is no other city in the entire world, and of course, Rome is built on seven hills. There are other cities that are built on seven hills. Moscow is, and so is Seattle, Washington. But none of them fulfill this. It is the great city. What do they call Rome? And that's where the Vatican is located. Okay. So we have the revival of it, you see. The sixth head and the seventh head. There we have with Hitler. Now, before we go on, let's look at something else here in Revelation 17. It's very interesting. Now, we'll explain this a little bit more next time. Now, it says, verse 9, Revelation 17, here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains upon which the woman sits. So it controlled the last seven heads. There are seven kings, five are fallen, one is, and another is not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth. Now, if you haven't heard the sermon, The Beast That Was and Is Not and Yet Is, where I show very conclusively that in order to fulfill this prophecy, it's got to be the United Nations. Because it's not an empire, and yet will be given power. It has no geographical territory, yet it's going to rule the world. And notice it says, he is the eighth and is of the seven, and goes into perdition. So, all the other charts in the past have misinterpreted the eighth. And the eighth one has got to be, as we will see, Revelation 13. That beast of Revelation 13. So, we have back here in Daniel 7 the explanation as given. See, we can look back with historical fulfillment and we can match it up. Just like we've said in the past. When you look at a historical fulfillment, you have what? Perfect 2020 vision, looking back. But if you're back in the days of Daniel or in the days of John, looking forward, you can't understand these things. So, only at particular times in history are we able to see a fulfilled prophecy that took place at a specific time And we know by the fulfillment of it that God's hand was in it and that he did it. We can see that in relationship to the nations of the world, and we can see that in relationship to Christ, the church, and the promises of God. So we're almost out of time, so we'll go ahead and end it here, and we'll review a little bit next time, and then we will go into Daniel, the 8th chapter. The Canadian office, Post Office Box 125, Brockville, Ontario, K6V5V2. Australia, GPO 1574, Sydney, 2001. Auckland, New Zealand, Post Office Box 242, Waihai, 2981. Nigeria, Post Office Box 1174, Uyo, that is UYO, 520001, Akwa, Imbom State, Nigeria, West Africa. United Kingdom, Post Office Box 8224, Witham, CM81WZ. Republic of South Africa, Post Office Box 2624, Willoro, WILRO, Park, Republic of South Africa, 1731.